good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to another edition of Monday Night America. Today it's Excelsior. It is a very, very sad day in the world of entertainment. Stanley, who we've all come to know and love, passed away today. Most people know who he is. Many people don't. They have an idea of who he is, but have been affected by the work of Stan Lee. Incredible, the legacy that he leaves us. Stan Lee was born on December 28, 1922, and passed away on November 12, 2018. I never really thought that I would ever be doing a program like this. I've only done three of these before. And it is with the ultimate bit of sadness. I've only done a handful of these, and this is one that needed to be done. And it's, wow. I still cannot believe, I knew he was not doing very well, but it is still sad. A brief moment. I have known Stan Lee my entire life. I knew who he was. And the talent behind the man, it's obvious. You look at the material. Look at everything that he delivered to us and he worked with others to deliver to us. We'll get to what he's done. Probably one of his greater lines that are attributed to his characters was in the 2002 Spider-Man movie. With great power comes great responsibility. And I'm sorry if you haven't seen the movie, but it is easily one of the best one of the better superhero movies of all time. That is, in my honest opinion, and it is a very, very well done movie. The second movie was very well done. But again, those are just my opinions. Really don't comment about him right now. I'm just gathering my thoughts to go ahead and go over the career of this man. I want to give you a tiny, tiny taste. Many of you grew up listening, and I can't wait to have it. I have a collection of all of the programs, at least to this one character. We all know the words, and this is the intro to the 1967 program. A little bit of trivia, the program went from 1967 to 1970, and I'm going to have we'd have to do it live, so I'm not going to go ahead and try one of those trivias, but which program did it play on in the Los Angeles market? Just curious if anyone has the answer to that, but once again, if you want to go ahead and give us a call, the number is 914-338-0314. This chat room should be open. Go ahead and join us there if you like. As I mentioned, Stan Lee, December 28, 1922, to today, November 12, 2018. Stan Lee was a comic book writer, editor, producer, and publisher. He was the editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics and later its publisher and chairman, leading its expansion from a small division of a publishing house to a large multimedia corporation. In collaboration with several artists, particularly Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko, He co-created fictional characters including Spider-Man, the Hulk, Doctor Strange, the Fantastic Four, Daredevil, Black Panther, the X-Men, and with co-writer Larry Lieber, the characters Ant-Man, Iron Man, and Thor. In doing so, he pioneered a more complex approach to writing superheroes in the 1960s. And in the 70s, challenged the standards of the Comics Code Authority, indirectly leading to it updating its policies. Following his retirement from Marvel, he remained a public figurehead for the company and frequently made cameo appearances in Marvel Cinematic Universe films, as well as movies based on Marvel characters such as Venom, Daredevil, and Deadpool. Meanwhile, he continued independent creative ventures into his 90s. You have to bear with me. There's going to be a bit of a pause there. I am not able to shake this unfortunate cough that I have with me right now. So I'm going to get through this as best I can. Lee was inducted into Comic Book Industry's Will Eisner Award Hall of Fame in 1994 and the Jack Kirby Hall of Fame in 1995. He received the National Medal of Arts in 2008. We'll get into his early life career a little bit later. We're just going to go over the man. I believe the number of cameos in the Marvel movies, I believe it's 4 to 5. I will have to check that. But for those of you that know and don't know, he has a few more cameos that were outside of the Marvel Universe. He had a few roles, and he had a program not too long ago, and I'm forgetting the name of it right now. I just could not find it, but it had to do with modern, or like people such as ourselves being superheroes. And I forget the channel when it was on and where, but it wasn't too long ago. But I'm sure I'll find it as the evening progresses. But I had a chance to meet him briefly in 2010 at the Hollywood Expo. I want to make sure I get this in. It was an audacious. Sorry, I'm starting to speak like 45 there. Repeating almost every other word. It was, I think, 4 or 5 different types of genres that were in this ambitious Comic-Con, or I shouldn't say convention. I know there was anime, there was science fiction, comic books, and there was another one I do not recall right now, but it was an ambitious endeavor. And what killed it was there was another convention right around the corner, you know, in LA, everything's right around the corner, but they did a lousy job of advertising, apparently. When Stan Lee appeared, and I do have a interview of him, I'm going to have to try to find the video of the interview with Stan Lee, when he was there the next day on Saturday, only 137 people showed up. I remember that figure. I may be wrong. I don't know. We'll see, but I want to welcome Bobby B in the chat room, and of course I want to welcome Laker fan, and on hold for some time now, I want to bring him on right now. He is our comic books maven. He is the expert here on NDB Media. I want to bring him on right now. Peter, the big dog Gamma. Good evening, Peter. How are you? And how are you, my brother? How's everything tonight?
I'm doing fine. I mean, he's 95. He lived a full life. You know, unfortunately, the last couple of years, the elder abuse was kind of excessive that we found out about late last year, early this year. And luckily, that was somewhat taken care of. And he was pretty much in retirement these last probably maybe 3 months or so. They made the announcement, I believe it was on, I know I saw it on Instagram. I'm not sure if he did on his Twitter account, which I'm pretty sure he did, that he was no longer going to be doing any conventions or any more signings, at least in the foreseeable future, so that he can get his health back, you know, at the time. But everybody that followed Stan or knew what was going on with all the problems he was having thought that was a great thing, that, yeah, he should stay home and rest. And if he feels able to, we were thinking late next year, especially with San Diego Comic-Con, it being the 50th year at San Diego Comic-Con, you know, we thought maybe that would, he'd make an appearance there or something, but, you know, I got the messages started coming in this morning, probably as soon as everybody else was getting, because a couple of ones that I saw, you know, they were only, they were either a minute or less when I got the notice, and it just said that, paramedics were called to his home early this morning, and that he was rushed to Cedars-Sinai, and they pronounced him there at the hospital. So, I mean, he had a number of complications. He had been suffering from pneumonia multiple times in the last within the last year or so. So, he could have been, you know, who knows what it could have been. But like I said, he was 95. I mean, he's led an incredible, full life, and now he's at peace. And hopefully he's, you know, he's there with his wife now, creating characters up there.
Indeed. Peter, we're going to be going over his early life career. I'm going to go over snippets as we continue this conversation. And I do, as I say, I collected all the intros for the animated Spider-Man programs. As a matter of fact, you heard the first one that ran from 1967 to 1970. I have the second one. We're going to play it now, and then we're going to get into his early life, and we're going to continue the conversation. That one was the second program. I do apologize. I cut into the third one. That one only ran from 1981 to 1982. It really didn't have the same catchy tune of the very campy 1960s version, but that's the one that a lot of us knew of that just added to the story of Spider-Man. And at that time in the early 80s is when we were thinking, when is there going to be a Spider-Man movie? Because not long before, or I think I messed up on that, but prior to the 1981 series, we had, of course, the Man of Steel in 1978, Superman. And then in 1982, we had a Superman 2. One of the hopes as us kids growing up would be to see a Spider-Man movie. If you could do it, wow, it'd be amazing. They were always in the works. Do you remember growing up about that, Peter, you know, that if fans wanted to see a superhero movie, it was a Spider-Man movie?
Oh, yeah. We had been, you know, hoping for a Spider-Man movie for decades. You know, when the Superman movie came out, you know, and then, you know, 1, 2, 3, and 4, and then there was that gap. And in the 90s, you know, was, or late 80s, early 90s, was the Batman franchise that came out, and we were all clamoring, what was going, you know, what's up with Marvel? Why aren't they doing it? And of course they had the campy TV show. And of course they had the horrible Captain America and Fantastic Four movies that came out, that they just did them so that they wouldn't lose their rights to the movie rights. So they did those horrible ones. And now they're cult classics, especially the Fantastic Four one, which was, I believe, made by Roger Corman. And it was horrible. People wanted just to say they have it, but it is horrible. And then there was the Captain America one where his mask was actually a motorcycle helmet, you know, with painted blue with wings on it, you know. So, but that was then, and then surprisingly, when Marvel went and started doing their movies, they started with the X-Men, you know, which was a surprise, you know, and it went from there. But when we finally got the Spider-Man movie, you know, we were ecstatic about it, and unfortunately, they seem to start off great, and then they kind of go downhill. And but now it seems that they finally have gotten it right with this, the newest one, the newest set now, which the second one should be coming out, I believe, late next year. It's finally been done right because Marvel now has their hands on it. As the Spider-Man movies that were done earlier were all Sony, and Sony took care of it by themselves because that was when Marvel was going bankrupt, and to get money in, they started selling off their movie rights to different characters. And that's why we see Deadpool and Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, Venom, and there's a few other ones that they still, that Sony and I forgot who has Deadpool, I think it's Fox, they both still have rights to other characters. So we're waiting to find out what's happening with that. And Marvel, of course, now has gotten back Spider-Man and Fantastic Four, and I believe Deadpool also. So we'll see them if they're integrated into the Marvel Cinematic Universe in the near future. But it's a good thing that now you can see the difference between what Sony did, which was admirable. The first couple of movies were pretty good. But as I said, the first one was great, and then it went downhill on each of the movies. And if you look at the money that each one has made, each one has made less than the previous one, which is not the way to go when you're doing sequels. And finally, on the uptake with the newest Spider-Man movie, it finally broke that mold because Marvel was behind it. As I said, Sony did a great job, you know, and, you know, it's great always to have Stan Lee in all those cameos. Now, I don't know if people know this or not, but they filmed numerous, I believe it was a couple of years ago, they filmed numerous cameo appearances of Stan Lee. I think maybe knowing that he was already in his 90s, and I'm not sure they were saying he was going to pass away, but he could retire and not do anything anymore. I think it was hopefully more their thinking. But from my understanding, they filmed at least close to a dozen cameos on top of the ones we've already seen and we're expecting to see now in Avengers 4, the second Spider-Man movie, and Captain Marvel. And supposedly there's a dozen other cameos that are in the bank, so to speak, for other movies that they'll probably work in somehow.
Appreciate that, Big Dog. In his early life, Stanley Martin Lieber was born on December 28, 1922 in Manhattan, New York City, in the apartment of his Romanian-born Jewish immigrant parents. Celia and Jack Lieber at the corner of West 98th Street and West End Avenue in Manhattan. His father, trained as a dress cutter, worked only sporadically after the Great Depression, and the family moved further uptown to Fort Washington Avenue in Washington Heights, Manhattan. Lee had one younger brother named Larry Lieber. He said in 2006 that as a child he was influenced by books and movies, particularly those with Errol Flynn playing heroic roles. By the time Lee was in his teens, the family was living in an apartment at 1720 University in the Bronx. Lee has described it as a third-floor apartment facing outback. Lee and his brother shared the bedroom while their parents slept on a fold-out couch. Lee, attending DeWitt Clinton High School in the Bronx in his youth, enjoyed writing and entertained dreams of one day writing, dare I say, quote, the great American novel. He has said that in his youth, he worked such part-time jobs as writing obituaries for a news service and press releases for the National Tuberculosis Center, delivering sandwiches for the Jack May Pharmacy to offices in Rockefeller Center, working as an office boy for a trouser manufacturer, ushering at the Ravioli Theater on Broadway, and selling subscriptions to the New York Herald Tribune newspaper. He graduated from high school early, age 16 and a half, and in 1939, and joined the WPA Federal Theater Project. The WPA is an acronym for a Depression era project, and we'll get to all the acronyms mean something, but they just shorten them to the three letters more often than not. But we'll get to that later. Big Dog, both you and I had a chance not only to meet him, but to interview him in the aforementioned Hollywood Expo in 2010. Did you have a chance to meet him prior to that? Question one, have you ever met him prior to that moment?
Yes, I've met Stan Lee, including that incredibly interesting convention we went to. I'll just put it that way. I've probably met him four times.
Wow. Okay, fair enough. I guess question number two then would have been, if you had not, well, what were your thoughts? Because we had access to him in 2010. Surprisingly, in that disastrous convention, it just 137 people showed up for his Saturday event. It was unreal. If it would have been a baseball game, everyone would have had a foul ball, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, it was interesting. And the one thing for those people who are out there that are listening or watching the news, and I'm not sure if what's been said online, I just want to clear up one thing, and it's not a slight, but they keep giving him credit for, of course, he and Jack Kirby pretty much invented the Marvel Universe in the 60s, but the thing is they are giving him credit for creating Captain America, and I just want to get that one out of the way. He did not create Captain America. Captain America was in the 40s. In fact, it was March of 1941, and that's Joe Simon and Jack Kirby created Captain America. Now, it just so happened that Stan Lee, I believe, was either a letterer or an inker on that particular issue, so he was actually involved in it, but he didn't have anything to do with the creative process of it. And I know it's a common misconception because of Captain America being in the movies, and they just associate that with, of course, the Marvel Universe. But Captain America was actually from a company called Timely, which was Marvel Comics before it became Marvel Comics. Timely morphed into Marvel Comics in the 60s with the beginning of Fantastic Four number one, where that was their first book. So just want to get that cleared. I mean, he was there, but, you know, the way everybody is just giving him credit for that. And then, like I said, it's not a slight on him because, of course, he had input on everything. He pretty much created everything else in the Marvel Universe from Fantastic Four all the way up probably to the late 70s when he finally stepped down and became, I believe it was Chairman Emeritus. Is that how you say it, Roger? I want to make sure I get the thing correctly. Yeah, so he was elevated to that. And he had some input, but he was already older, and he was I believe, Army veteran? Because I know he was in the Army. He was in the military, excuse me. I'm not sure if it was Army or not. Okay.
Yes, as a matter of fact, Lee entered States Army in early 1942 and served with the U.S. as a member of the Signal Corps, repairing telephones and other telecommunications equipment. And later he was transferred to the Training Film Division. There's more to that later.
So, but I just hope that the suits that were against the people that were responsible for his elder abuse. I'm probably the fact that he passed away, they won't go forward because I believe that's the way the law works, does it not, Roger? That when if a person is accusing you of something and they pass away, there's no way to go forward with it because they can't give any more depositions or anything. So the suit is pretty much dropped. I believe that's my understanding of it.
Okay. Not necessarily, and I'll explain to you why. But let's go back to the suit. Would you tell me what the suit is? Who is suing whom?
Oh, I didn't know you were having a show, so I don't have the names present, but it
No, that's
it
fine. No,
is,
don't worry. But it's...
The lawsuit, it was just the way they were treating him. It was his manager who took over. He kind of wormed his way in to it. He was a friend of a friend, and he kind of wormed his way into Stan Lee's life and then kind of took over as a new manager, and he fired all of Stan's inner circle per se. He got rid of the lawyer. He got rid of his nurse that he had had for years and years and years, and a couple other people that were really close to Stan. So only he took care of Stan. And anybody that was curious and wants to see, there's a video of, I believe it was the San Jose Comic-Con last summer. Last summer or this summer? Anyways, you can look it up, Stan Lee. He had been there signing. It's summertime. It's, you know, 90-plus degrees. The man's 94, 95 years old. And they're having him sign his signature, and he's so out of it that he can't even sign his name. The person puts the book in front of him, and he's like, okay, Stan, you ready? Okay, S-T-A-N-L-E-E. And you see the look on Stan Lee's face, and he has those eyes where there's no one home. He looks like he doesn't know what's going on. From what I was reading, they had him going 6, 7, 8 hours stretches without giving him rest, without giving him food, without giving him water, and it's all on video, you know. And of course, the person that was, you know, supposed to be his manager taking care of him, of course, denies all this. But it had been said by so many people, and all it was it was a money grab, because his signature, you used to be able to get a signature for $25 to $50, and then it went up to $100, and it went up to $150 and up. And the thing is, it's all cash. It was always all cash. Because
yes,
I knew one of the guys.
Big up. Stop right there. Yeah. Who is suing whom?
The former lawyer.
Okay, the former lawyer is suing the current manager?
But yeah, who was at the time the current manager? He was now taking it. They actually had the Department of I forgot, you know, for elder abuse, kind of like Children's Services, but it was Elder Services. They came in and they had him removed. They had him. They got a court order and had him taken out, and they put in a person to take care of Stan Lee after that. And that was just maybe within the last, I'd say maybe 4 to 6 months ago, that this happened, where that person was removed and he was fighting his way to get back in. In fact, the Beverly Hills or Hollywood, I believe it was Hollywood, because I believe that's where Stan Lee lived, in Hollywood. The police department there is suing this former manager because he was calling in 911 calls saying that people were abusing Stan Lee, and he had to get in there. But his only thing was he wanted to get in there so he could hear what was going on. Because what happened was is the Department of Elderly Services went in with a detective and went in there to talk to Stan, and the detective ordered a police officer who also accompanied them to stay outside and not to let anyone in. The former manager shows up wanting to go in. He said, like, I'm sorry, you can't go in. He's being interviewed by, you know, elderly services and a detective. And so the former manager leaves, and he went around the corner and got on the cell phone and called 911 saying Stan Lee was being held hostage at gunpoint. So, of course, they sent the SWAT team and the whole thing. And, you know, they get there and they see the police officer. The police officer is like, what's going on? And the detective comes out and explains, no, we're here. We're supposed to be here, blah, blah, blah. And they wrote the former manager, I guess, a ticket or a summons or whatever to appear in court for calling the false 911. And then he did it again just about a week later. So he was arrested and he made bail, and the lawsuit on that, or the suit against him for calling in false 911 calls, that was pending at the time. I haven't kept up on it, though. You know, I just was glad that he was out of Stan's life.
Yes, but I don't understand who would be suing him. They would be charging him with false.
Okay, they're charging him then. They're charging him with with calling in false.
Yeah.
So he has charges. He has charges from the Hollywood Police Department, and then he has lawsuits pending from the former manager, and I believe it's his former handler.
Okay, it depends what they allege. And again, ladies and gentlemen, I have a rudimentary understanding of the law, but let me go back. It's West Hollywood sheriffs that would be involved
okay.
if it was in West Hollywood. Otherwise, it's LAPD because Hollywood is in Los Angeles. So it really doesn't matter at this point who and what it is, but we do need to get some things cleared out. If it's in West Hollywood, it's the sheriffs. If it's in Hollywood itself, it's LAPD. And if it's in Beverly Hills, well, it's Beverly Hills PD. Fine. Whoever he called and he called the bogus 911 calls, he's got the charges pending against him depending on who. And it's up to the DA if they're going to follow through on that or not. Most likely they will because that's ridiculous. You don't do that. And when you spend a lot of money like that, DA generally goes forward on it. But that's fine on that. On the other thing, it depends what they're suing him for. What is the basis of the suit? And ladies and gentlemen, this is part of the story. We'll get past this. But why are they suing him?
Yeah, it's a convoluted suit because it involves the daughter and allegations are flying on all sides from like three different sides and everybody's blaming each other saying that the other person is trying to get in to stand and have his ear so that he has all the money that whoever has Stan's ear is the one that's getting all the money. And supposedly there's allegations about his daughter that she put these people in so that she could get her share of the money earlier. It's a big, big mess. But essentially, the guy that was in charge, that was kicked out, that made the false 911 calls, they're trying to get money back from him somewhere in the amount of around $3 or $4 million.
So in other words, he was using monies without permission. He was stealing from him.
Because he got Stanley to sign the checks. He
of
got
course.
Stanley to sign the checks. Yeah, and one of them was for $650,000 for a condo in I forgot where. And then another one was for something like $2 million. And when they asked him what it was for, he said, "Oh, well, Stan wants me to be close and to be safe. So he got me this property."
Yeah, I'm sure he did. Okay.
Yeah, it's a big mess.
Okay, it is a big mess. Who is the heir to the fortune? That's the first thing that has to be determined. Who is the heir? Who's going to get the money?
As far as I know, I believe it's the daughter. But
okay, so
when I was really looking into this, keeping an eye on this, 4 to 6 months ago. They had copies of the actual of his will and it was posted online and it was, you know, the whole thing signed. And they're fighting over which one is the actual one because there's one that says that the daughter gets nothing and there's one that says the daughter gets everything. Because he's taken care of his daughter her entire life. She has never worked a day in her life. And according to the first paperwork that was shown and the restraining order that was at first put on her – to keep her away from Stan Lee, he was alleging in the paperwork that he spends anywhere from $10,000 to $15,000 a month on her expenses alone, and that she has never worked at all a day in her life. So he is pretty much taking care of her, and she is in her mid-60s, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. The first thing that will have to be established is, you know, where's the money going to go? If there is no will, obviously the state gets to put their 2 cents in. But if there is a will, fine, you go by that. But if there's a second will, it has to be established. There is a long procedure. Just because you have a second will doesn't mean it's legal. There's a lot of things you have to do, and here's a little bit of trivia, folks. A notarial signature on a will does not count. It's actually illegal. So if you had it notarized, it's worthless. And if a notary actually put pen and a seal on there, the attorney or the notary, good luck. You're in trouble, pal. Because when I was a notary, I knew I could not sign wills. The only ones that can sign wills in the state of California are, and I have to be very careful by saying sign. It's more like certify. There's only two people that can certify a will, and that's a judge and an attorney. And that's it. That's it. No one else. Because you can be talking about millions and millions and millions of dollars, so only two people. So if there's a second will, it needs to have some sort of proof and usually signed by an attorney. And then if there's two wills signed by attorneys, well, then it's going to be up to the judge to determine. And once it's determined who gets the money, if she gets the money, the daughter, then she has case to go after the manager for the money. But good luck. How much do you want to get out of them? $3-4 million? How much is it going to cost you to get that money? And how much is Stanley worth? So to evaluate that as well. But I'm not trying to dismiss this in any way. It's just a lot of stuff has to be determined, and we're not really ready to discuss it. And I don't have I know the law, but in a very narrow scope. I do not pretend to be an attorney, but I do know a little bit. And based on what I'm hearing, there's still a lot more we could talk about another day. Fair enough?
Fair enough. Just to clear the one question that you had, Stan Lee is worth an estimated $50 million.
Okay.
Or was worth at the time of his death.
And by the way, I have to go on record right now regarding the manager that the big dog did refer to. It is not the opinion of NDB Media, nor is it of Roger Noriega, nor of Peter Gama, that this man tried to worm his way in. It is a word that first came to mind when we were reading our notes. That is what came to mind. We are not implying any such disparity on any actions the manager may have done. It is a word that we used, and we singularly and objectively acknowledge that it was not the correct word to use at this point. It was so that you could understand what the allegation was. We are not alleging that he wormed his way in. It is part of the general story that is out there. So we just
I have his name if you want it. You want his name or
don't need it?
Okay.
That's okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
I had to put that legal disclaimer out there before we go any further. So anyway, we're gonna jump very quickly to his early career. With the help of his uncle Robbie Solomon, Lee became an assistant in 1939 at the New Timely Comics, which I believe the big dog mentioned just a short while ago, division of Pulp Magazine and comic book publisher Martin Goodman's company. Timely, by the 1960s, would evolve into Marvel Comics, which again was fed to us moments ago by our aforementioned comic book maven, whose cousin Jean was Goodman's wife, was formerly hired by Timely editor Joe Simon. His duties were prosaic at first. Quote, in those days, the artist dipped the pen in ink, so I had to make sure the inkwells were filled, unquote, Lee recalled in 2009. Also, I went down and got them their lunch. I did proofreading. I erased the pencils from the finished pages for them. Marshaling his childhood ambition to be a writer, young Stanley Lieber made his comic book debut with the text filler, Captain America Foils the Traitor's Revenge in Captain America's Comics No. 3, cover dated May 1941. Using the pseudonym Stan Lee. That was the first time, folks, which years later he would adopt as his legal name. Lee later explained in his autobiography and numerous other sources that he had intended to save his given name for more literary work. This initial story also introduced Captain America's trademark ricocheting shield toss. We'll talk about that, as I mentioned. The Big Dog gave us some of that before. Again, he did not invent Captain America. He got the text filler, which is kind of cool. He graduated from writing filler to actual comics with a backup feature, quote, headline, Hunter, Foreign Correspondent, 2 issues later. Lee's first superhero co-creation was a Destroyer in Mystic Comics number 6, August 1941. Other characters he co-created during this period, fans and historians call the Golden, I'm sorry, and Peter will correct me if I'm wrong, call the Golden Age of comic books, include Jack Frost, debuting in USA Comics number 1, August 1941, and Father Time, debuting in Captain America Comics number 6, August 1941. When Simon and his creative partner Jack Kirby left late in 1941 following a dispute with Goodman, the 30-year-old publisher installed Lee, just under 19 years old, as interim editor. The youngster showed a knack for the business that led him to remain as the comic book division's editor-in-chief as well as art director for much of that time until 1972 when he would succeed Goodman as publisher. And then very quickly, we're going to get into his I've got two more things to read on the United States Army. He entered in early 1942 and served with the U.S. as a member of the Signal Corps, repairing telegraph poles and other communications equipment. He was later transferred to the Training Film Division, where he worked writing manuals, training films, slogans, and occasionally cartooning. His military classification, he says, was playwright. He adds that only 9 men in the U.S. Army were given that title. Vincent Fago, editor of Timely's animation comics section, which put out humor and funny animal comics, filled in until Lee returned from his World War II military service in 1945. Lee was inducted into the Signal Corps Regimental Association and given him honorary membership of the 2nd Battalion of 3rd U.S. Infantry Regiment out of Joint Base Lewis-McChord at the 2017 Emerald City Comic-Con for his prior service. And then in the mid-1950s, by which time the company was now known as Atlas Comics, Lee wrote stories in a variety of genres, including romance, westerns, humor, science fiction, medieval adventure, horror, and suspense. In the 1950s, Lee teamed up with his comic book colleague, Dan DiCarlo, to produce the syndicated newspaper strip, My Friend Irma, based on the radio play starring Marie Wilson. By the end of the decade, Lee had become dissatisfied with his career and considered quitting the field. Wow. Big Dog, what did you want to add to that? I know we're jumping around his career right now, but that's fine.
I'm sorry, Raj. I couldn't hear you. I'm actually having plumbing problems, and the plumber is here with the jet vac and vacuuming stuff out. So you asked me a question, I believe, but I don't know what it was. I stepped outside real quick.
Anything you want to add? Because I was talking about his time in the 1950s when he actually was unhappy with his career and he considered quitting the field. That's where I stopped right there. I was about to get into the Marvel Revolution in the 1950s, but that's okay.
No, it sounds about right. He had been wanting to do more and felt that he wasn't given the chance. So, but luckily he didn't quit. Otherwise, who knows what we would have had.
Yes, definitely. We already, as a matter of fact, the Big Dog did fill us in on it, so I really don't want to repeat a lot of the details, but we know that in the 1950s, DC Comics editor Julius Schwartz revived the superhero archetype and experienced a significant success with its updated version of the Flash, and later with the super team, the Justice League of America. In response, publisher Martin Goodman assigned Lee to come up with a new superhero team. Lee's wife suggested that he experiment with stories he preferred, since he was planning on changing a career but had nothing to lose. We know what happened. Gee, what was the group, the first superhero group that he and artist Jack Kirby created? I'm sure you know this, Big Dog.
The Avengers?
Fantastic Four.
I'm sorry, Fantastic Four. Yeah, that was because that was the first book that Marvel published.
Yes. And I believe it was a little bit later.
I'm sorry. Because, like I said, I'm trying to jump in because I'm talking to the plumber at the same time I'm talking to you. So I'm muting back and forth. So excuse me if I don't answer right away.
And that's fine. Alrighty then.
Okay, so we're
all right. Anyway, no, I apologize. I just received an email from someone who I invited to be on the program, and I really don't understand the context of the email. So that's fine. We're just going to go ahead and continue. Anyway, Lee acted on the advice, giving his superheroes a flawed humanity, a change from the ideal archetypes that were typically written for preteens. Before this, most superheroes were idealistically perfect people with no serious lasting problems. Lee introduced complex, naturalistic characters who could have bad tempers, fits of melancholy, and vanity. They bickered amongst themselves, worried about paying their bills and impressing girlfriends, got bored, or were even sometimes ill. This is what Lee did, changed everything. Because if you look back in the 1940s, Captain America was exactly that. He was Captain America, the ultimate superhero. He was a badass in every sense of the word. The Nazis, the Japanese, the Italians, they had nothing on this guy. There was no one that could beat him. But he was Captain America. He was perfect. Stan Lee changed. He gave his characters real life attributes. And that is what really put him on the map and changed storytelling, I guess, for the better, right, Peter?
Yeah, he made them more realistic, and it was a breath of fresh air to see that they had problems, you know. And the thing was, you haven't gotten to them yet, but and if you want, we can go into the background of how Spider-Man came about and how he almost didn't come about. But a lot of course, comic book collectors are usually, you know, the preteen to teenage years. And what made Spider-Man great and the most popular Marvel character of all time, because that's what Spider-Man is, Wolverine's right behind him, but Spider-Man is the all-time character, is he went to high school, he had girl problems, he had school problems, he had acne, you know, he couldn't deal with the people that were taking care of him, which were his grandparents. I mean, it was real life situations that Stan Lee wrote about. And of course, Jack Kirby's just artwork and Steve Ditko's artwork was just, you know, the perfect match to it. But it was Stan Lee's writing and his writing of all the characters that made them flawed, you know, and that's what endeared them to everyone. And that's why everything, you know.
Mrs. Lee.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, she said, write what you're good at and just do it. So, yeah, the rest, ladies and gentlemen, we really say is history. His career revolutionized so much. I didn't realize that I had seen Stan Lee in many other programs. He has not only cameoed in superhero movies, but I think you know that, right, Peter?
Yeah, he had cameos before, you know, he got into the Marvel Cinematic Universe to do the stuff. Let me step outside. You know, they weren't big stuff, but you know, he made his mark, and of course he since he became famous in the 70s, he he hung around with all the Hollywood stars because they moved out to Hollywood this way, and he hung out a lot with Hugh Hefner, which I thought was hilarious.
Birds of a feather, and then sometimes just opposites attract. You never know what it is. But yes, nevertheless, we know that he was, I believe it's 45 cameos. Am I mistaken on that?
Sounds about right.
Yeah, I'm not going to go ahead and mention them all because it's just too much. But in the little bit of time that we have left, you know, what are your real feelings and thoughts about Stan Lee? I mean, this is the guy who gave us the modern superhero. And yeah, I couldn't say he is the guy, but he is definitely one of them. And he changed storytelling, as I mentioned, not a few minutes ago. It was really cool. He made the characters real. And he gave us what we have today.
Yeah, and it was because of him, you know, that had the foresight to just put in just for, like we said, you know, flawed characters, flawed heroes, you know, where sometimes, you know, the good guy is lost. And, you know, real life stuff. And he was the first one to put in a black character, Black Panther. And of course, he had those three issues in Amazing Spider-Man where they dealt with drugs that wasn't authorized by the Comics Code Authority, which was a big, big deal back then. Now no one really cares about the Comics Code Authority, but back then it was a major, major deal. And he was in the forefront of thinking as far as writing and how to write the characters and stuff. And, you know, I've met him, like I said, three, four times, and I've seen him many, many more times because the friend that I used to help out with at Frankenson's, he started a collaboration with Stan Lee called Stan Lee Collectibles before it got all crazy. And so I helped him out a few times, and Stan's a great guy, was always nice. He truly, truly loved the fans. He loved talking to the fans. He even if he was only supposed to be there for 2 hours signing, if there were people still in line, he would not leave till everyone got their signature. He was that type of person, always had a smile, loved children, loved when little kids would come up to him. And the man was, you know, he lived for the fans, and the fans loved him for it. And he was honest and transparent. You know, he wasn't fake. You could tell he really enjoyed it. I mean, you were there at that horrible con that we went to, the convention. He loved to talk. I remember they actually had to cut him off because he wanted to keep on talking. And you could tell he was truly a storyteller, you know, and he was just an all around great guy. And he was married to his wife for, geez, I don't know what it was, 67 years or something, you know, till she passed away. Yeah. Till she passed away last, I believe sometime in late 2017 or 2016.
July 6th of 2017. She was
2017, okay.
She was 95. She was 95
yes,
when she passed
yes.
away.
Yes. She was a little bit older than him. And but it was true love. I believe she was married. And I think he was seeing someone. And they met and the sparks flew. And a couple of years later, they were married. You know, she got a divorce, which, of course, you know, divorce was taboo back in the, would have been late 40s, early 50s. You just didn't do that, you know, but their love was true, and they stayed together forever and forever. And it wasn't until after she passed away that all the elder abuse started within months of her passing away. We were hearing stories, and unfortunately it turned out to be true, you know, of all the things that they were having them do, the signings, and not giving them any time to rest, you know. But, you know, people stepped in and took care of them, you know, and got that person out of there, or the people that were involved, you know, to help them. So hopefully, like I said, these last 4-5 months of his life where hopefully he was comfortable and he was, you know, at home. Because I know he was at home because I followed him on Instagram. And his Instagram, he would do videos maybe once a week just talking about, you know, whatever. And but he was always at home. But you could hear in his voice he was very tired. And unfortunately for me, I felt like I don't think he's got much longer. You know, just I think just the stress of everything. And him losing his wife really, really affected him. So, you know, but like I said, I mean, he was a wonderful man. And all the accolades he so richly deserved and his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, everything else. I mean, he brought so much joy to so, so many people that made people, teenagers, feel that it was okay to be different. It was okay to have problems, you know, by the way he wrote his things to show that his characters had the same flaws that you do or I do. And that would endear them to everyone.
Yeah. I hear you. And I appreciate that, Peter. That's probably the fitting ending right there. Folks, we lost someone that gave us so much. And it is genuinely a sad day. We mourn. It is one of those, gosh, it's not even a generational talent because he passed the generations. It is. He is one of those that you would maybe consider. And I only use the names. You can throw your accusations later, but Charlie Chaplin, Robin Williams, Stan Lee. There are those that stand out. He's definitely one of them. The Earth lost a great storyteller today, and I guess we're going to mourn now. But yep, I think he's entertaining a few other people now in another place. Good for him. Unlucky for us. Well, alrighty then. Big Dog, I want to go ahead and thank you for joining me, and I feel for you, pal. I know this affects you more than it affects me. I am a fan. I know who he is, but it is a big deal. I get it. And thank you for joining me tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, we just did a little bit on the life of Stan Lee. There's ever so much more. Take a look at it. It's an exciting story. And when you see that, you have an idea of what gave us the characters that we have today. I know we hit on Spider-Man a lot, but there were so many others. I mean, if there's someone that truly invented a universe, it was Stan Lee, and it was Jack Ruby, correct?
Jack Kirby. No, Jack Ruby's the one that shot.
Jack Kirby.
And it had to do with
the Yeah, family. Sorry. Very good. Jack Kirby. Both of them. All right. Fair enough. I guess I had that one coming. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you once again. Today is the official day that we're celebrating Veterans Day, which was yesterday. Just remember, if you do thank a veteran, always add, we will never forget. That's even greater than just thanking them because you understand what they're doing. So ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Peter, I'm Roger. This is Monday Night America. We are saddened by the loss of Stan Lee, but we're also not fools, and we'd be remiss if we did not mention the souls that have been lost in Northern and Southern California in the fires. It is very sad. Our thoughts are with them. We hope for them a quick recovery, as we hope for Stan Lee's daughter to be able to move on, get the affairs taken care of, and get back to living. Hopefully they'll be able to get through this. All right. This is Monday Night America, folks. Thank you. We are out. Big Dog, thank you. We'll be talking soon.
No problem. Thank you.
Thanks, ladies and gentlemen. We're out of here. Peace!